What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Citizen Defense Podcast. You got Evan back this go around. He's had some time to get all of his stuff square, and he is back on the show. Yeah, this one's not going to be a crazy episode. We just wanted to try to keep everything light this go around. We've got a lot going on. Those of y'all watching on video, you can see I got drywall mud all over my shirt trying to get stuff done to sell the house. And with that, content on social media and on here is probably going to start sandbagging a little bit with trying to get moved out of this house, trying to find another one. So just keep that in mind if you're not seeing me be as active on social media as I usually am. But yeah, so with this one, we're going to kind of talk about just kind of like the training woes, right? The issues that we have with training. It's not always light. It's not always perfect. That the way that, you know, we, some of the clips that I have on Instagram, like, yeah, those are some of the best runs of the day, but those weren't all the runs of the day, right? So, and a lot of guys on social media do this stuff. It's not just me. And I always try to be honest and post the, you know, the stuff that doesn't go well, right? I try to always post or show clips of my targets or videos of my targets if I'm trying new drills, to be open and honest with people about my capabilities and, you know, what else they could expect trying to do it themselves. But when we're pushing, whether it's in dry fire or live fire, things like that, we always have the issues in training that make us want to beat our head against the wall, or like some other people say, like, drive off in the ditch, right? You're thinking about whatever you did wrong coming from the range, and you're just want to drive off in the ditch. And yeah, man, it can be anything. I guess I'll start off on this one. One of the issues that drives me crazy is definitely when, or I would say with a lot of people, the issue that they're going to have is finding the right technique that's going to work for them. And I'm not saying that this is going to be a technique from a trainer, right? This is you developing your technique for your shooting, your grip pressures, your grip placements, your trigger press, visual verification, right? Or visual confirmation. You trying to develop all this stuff for yourself is not always going to go right. You might have something that seems like it's working right for a while, and then it changes, and then you're like, what just happened, right? So I was doing all this stuff. Everything was going great, and now everything just went to shit, and now I got to figure out what's going on, and some of that may be changing whatever's going on in your shooting and diverting from what your original game plan was. And that's whenever I talk to people about some things with shooting, that, well, I do things this way, specific this way, I'm always asking them to try something different first. Don't be concrete on one particular technique because this particular person told you that's what they're doing, or you're trying to emulate what that other person is doing. Because just because what they're doing works for them isn't necessarily going to work for you. So you need to be open-minded about developing your own skill. And unfortunately, that takes time. You're going to have to hammer it out, and it's going to take time. And I can tell you, I've done it myself. And it's like when I change something on my grip or whatever, you know, I would dry fire twice a day, hard, 2 weeks, just hammering it out. Because I want it to get to that subconscious level. I don't want to be playing with it again at the range, like, yep, doing this, yep, doing that. I want to try to speed it up and get back to that pace. And man, like, sometimes I've done it and it's like things don't work out and I'm going back to the drawing board and square one, beating my head against the wall. Like, it's not always fun.
Yeah. I mean, from my perspective, obviously, you know, as I've talked about before, I'm a little bit or a lot out of practice right now. But one of my sticking points for me is still trying to shoot with both eyes open. I don't. And every time I try to go to both eyes open, I can't get a steady sight picture. So that's one of those things that's a sticking point for me in training, is it's like, I know, you know, per what most, you know, a lot of people talk about, a lot of trainers, a lot of shooters talk about, is the benefit to having both eyes open. And that's one of those things that's a big hang up for me. Like, I grew up my whole life shooting with essentially just with one eye. And so from muscle memory to just like when I open that other eye, that's one of those things that just throws me off to no end. And I haven't, like what you're talking about, doing dry fire. And that's one of those things that I'm probably going to have to do for, you know, longer than 2 weeks. Like that's going to take, you know, that's going to take dedication for quite a while to ever get to that point of being able to shoot consistently like that. It's something I'm aware of. It's something in my training that I know I need to do. And that's one of those things that, like, it's extremely hard for me. I don't know, you know, I think I know what the issue is. But basically I'm going to have to retrain the way I shoot. And that's a hard pill to swallow, to be like, okay, I'm going to throw away everything I've done and try to rebuild. Now, is it truly throwing away everything? No, I'm not talking about changing my grip. I'm not talking about all that, but I am talking about changing my sight picture and how I see my sights, which is going to change orientation where I draw the gun to, how I look down my sights. But that's one of those things that's the hard part about training and learning where you're deficient is you know, getting to that point and being like, okay, this is what I need to do. And then knowing what you need to do and committing to it. Because I've had such a long downtime, I kind of go back and forth in my head, and now's a perfect time, you know, once I can get freed up and get back to shooting consistently, actually making it to the range, now's probably a great time to do it. So we'll see, but that's, you know, from my hangups, that's probably my biggest one I have right now. You talked about grip changes. I remember, I think it was the last time we shot together in a class, like I was actually pushing my shot with my main hand on my grip. So I shoot left-handed, my left hand on the grip. I would actually tense my thumb and push the gun. And I didn't even realize I was doing it until the instructor looked at me and he's like, hey, you know, pointed out. So then I tried to go to, you know, more thumbs up to where I wasn't clamping down with my thumb to try to just alleviate that. And that's weird. That's not the way I shoot. So that's one of those things like you were talking about. That took a lot of just, you know, drawing and firing and even doing dry fire to a certain extent. It's got to become muscle memory, right? Because otherwise, every time you do it, you're going to be thinking about it. So you got to put in the reps to get to that point.
So on and not to diagnose you on here or anything like that, right? But when you talked about the, you know, the pressure with your thumb, and that reminds me about the conversation that we had with, when Nick Young was on here, that, you know, I felt like that, you know, I could see that same thing happening in my dry fire, that I'm clamping down with my thumb is kind of like sympathetic. But I think that stems more from too much firing hand tension and what I'm seeing. And so I'm torquing on the gun. Like you said, you know, you were pulling your shots or whatever. That's a good, you know, that's a fine point symptom of torquing your grip there. So it may not necessarily be the thumb placement, but the grip pressure in that firing hand. Cause I will tell you, man, like cause I used to do the same thing too. Like like everybody else, you naturally want to hold the gun with your firing hand harder, right? This is the hand that you feel is going to be controlling all the gun. All shooters do this. And so you naturally want to grip it hard. And most people, you try to grip it equally as hard with the support hand, but you tend to end up lacking in the support hand. So trying to back, essentially reverse your pressures to where you're just holding it with this hand and crushing with this one, like, man, if for me, it was like, it took me a while to get to where I could actually feel that out and like actually release the tension into this hand and just focus on crushing with this one. And it was kind of, it would screw with your mind a little bit too, because you're trying so hard to focus on not applying the tension that when you're crushing with this hand, it makes your firing hand, it feels like you're applying more pressure with your firing hand than you actually are. So it's kind of like you're battling out between your actual what you're feeling and what you're perceiving, you know. So yeah. That was definitely a mental issue with me trying to just change the habits, right? That was I definitely struggled mm-hmm. with that too, but that could be part of it, just, you know, just saying you might want to think about the grip pressures yeah. on that firing hand too. But
yeah and I know that's one of those things I need to develop better. Yeah.
And, you know, dry fire too, man. It's, you know, I try to stay with it. I can, another example of, you know, for training woes, right, with everything that we've been going on, trying to get the house ready and on the market and dealing with the buyers and all this stuff. And I, you know, I got a major match coming up here in 2 weeks. No, yeah, not this week, next weekend. Not that I'm claiming to do anything special, right? First major match, so we're going to see how that goes. But still, I should be, you would think I'd be a little bit more amped to get, you know, get my dry fire, be on my game. And I just haven't had the motivation to do it. And I probably, for leading up to the past 2 weeks prior to that, I probably hadn't dry fired for about a month. And it showed, and I was like, all right, man, I need to get back into dry fire. And I just started doing my normal stuff, working for some concealment. I'm just doing some dry fire from concealment. And dude, like, I'm missing my grip with my support hand. Like, I'm not, my dots bouncing all over the place. Things are yeah. not efficient. I'm not presenting to a small spot on the target. And I'm just like, what is going on here? Like, I know it's been a minute, but it ain't been that long of a minute. But it was enough for my motor functions for me that I went and I started dry firing probably about 10 minutes in the morning while I made coffee. And I finally kind of finally got the natural groove back. All right, you know, I'm catching the grip when it comes out for the draw. My presentation's right where it needs to be. Pick the small spot, darts there, it settles. I can press the trigger, no movement. Everything's great. And then the other I had a post earlier today, which was actually from yesterday. I just did some simple working from concealment, standard or staggered targets, one represented at 12 yards, one like 20, and just working some draw to transitions and things like that. So just little simple things like that, just trying to get back into the groove in. But yeah, man, it's frustrating when you think you're like, you're making progress and you're on your stuff, and then life kind of gets in the way, and then it's like, oh man, why are we back at the drawing board again?
Yeah. Well, and that goes back to the fact of, you know, working with a firearm, especially drawing from concealment, all that, it's a perishable skill. I won't say you're going to lose it entirely, but the level that you become accustomed to and the level that you feel comfortable with is very perishable if you don't, sharpen that axe every once in a while. You have to stay with it, and that's I go back to myself. I'm a perfect example. I felt like I was a decent shooter for a while, and I guarantee you right now, like, I'm probably, at least by my standards, poor. You know, like, I'm it's one of those things of, like, whenever I go back to Lifelines and all that, and I get back to hardcore, or, well, I say hardcore, certainly hardcore from what I'm comparing to now, but more, let's say, consistent training and training, you know, a lot more often, I know these issues that we're talking about now are going to rear their head again, because I don't even have the foundation, you know, I don't have the foundation that I had before sitting there for me to just be like, okay, let me tweak my grip a little bit like this. I'm going to go into this, I'm going to approach it from a standpoint of, hey, let's rebuild from scratch. Let's do everything. And the way I'm saying this, I'm going to try to essentially start over, rebuild my grip, try to go and make the changes that I remember I needed from before. Now, I'm also doing that essentially on a cold fire, but that's my plan going forward. I'm going to change my concealment position on my gun at that point where I'm carrying. There's going to be a lot of moving parts in that, that like currently I still carry in the same position because I haven't had the time to train to draw from my new position I want to carry in. But at that point in time, I plan to train in my new carry position and start building my grip from there and basically start over like you would square one of, hey, I'm going to learn how to draw a gun. And it's going to be interesting to see the issues that I've had before. I know I had an issue before with slapping, you know, not the way my, essentially the way I interact with my trigger, right? Not grabbing the trigger, pressing it, just getting real anxious and trying to just, you know, real quick slap it and send it. I get for speed, you know, that stuff's going to happen a lot faster, but it would be like a simple follow-up shot and I would slap it. And one of the things I had to work on was, hey, make sure you find your trigger. Don't just arbitrarily swing your trigger finger around in there and just really, that'll end up throwing you off worse than if you're under control. And that's one of those things of, that was just me being early on and not, and just kind of getting anxious. I'm trying to think, some of the other things is, I'm going to have to learn how to find the red dot again, right? Because like right now, if I draw, I'm not very fast on finding it because I'm just out of practice. And that's another one of those things I talk about, a perishable skill, your sight picture, you know, drawing your gun and getting that level of where you present your gun. That's definitely one of those perishable skills. Cause yeah, you may be able to still draw your gun down in front of you, but if you do that, you know, you draw your gun, put it in front of you with your eyes closed, are you going to be able to see your dot when you open your eyes? I've always felt like that's a good litmus test for, you know, are you aware? Do you know where your sight picture is going to be? Are you really up to practice on that? I don't know. That's one of the things that, like I was saying, I know I'm severely lacking right now.
Yeah, I would. So I actually, there are a couple things that I want to point on with what you brought up too. I want to ask you, but The one thing where you're talking about, you know, present with your eyes closed, and that's not really something I always go by, but I actually did that The other day just because I was curious, and the way I would do it, and my dot was in the window. Right, it wasn't perfect center. Mm-hmm. It wasn't absolutely perfect, but it was in the window. Yeah. I would close my eyes, draw an index, And that is a good test for you to be able to feel out your index and let you know that your index is proper. Right, that you've done it enough that even with your eyes closed, you can index. Now, granted, there could be human input. You know, you tweak your head, dip your head, something like that that could throw it off. But overall, that's not a bad way to just kind of get an idea of where your index is. And it's not necessarily like if you're bringing it up perfectly in your vision, but you can feel where it's at. You can feel it out throughout the way. You talking about, too, how you're – because you said I know you've always had this problem of shooting both eyes open. It's because you're like cross-eye dominant, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you tried occluding the dot?
No.
Have you tried doing that yet? So
I'll be honest, like when I kind of came to that realization, that was kind of when everything, I kind of fell out of shooting, honestly. And then was when I haven't ever made it back to getting back on that. But I have not tried it.
I'm curious with being cross-eye dominant, how that plays out. Like I understand how it should work because I talked about this briefly one time on a post, but you know, Ben Stoger and Joel Park, all these guys, they talk about, you know, the benefits of occluding the dot. Cause essentially if you're bringing it to one eye and like you have a target, you're pulling it up, like the dot's covered. If you're not target focused and you're focused on the dot, you won't be able to see the target. All you're going to see is the tape covered. But because our eyes build a full picture for us, if you're target focused, the tape will essentially appear translucent and you will be able to see the target. So I'm curious how that would go for being cross-eye dominant. if it would be, if it should be the same concept, or if it's going, if your eyes are going to affect it a different way. I'm just curious about that. Yeah, I'd like to know if you try that.
Yeah, and that's something we should, you know, whenever I can get freed back up, hopefully that's something we can give a shot at. You know, maybe we can, hopefully we can get together and shoot and see how that feels. Because I could essentially, we could do that whenever I can get freed up. But yeah, I don't, that's one of those things I wonder, you know, I don't, having not done it, I don't know, honestly, how it's going to work. Like, in theory, it should work fine, because since I'm, you know, since I always learned how to shoot with my left eye, and I'm actually right eye dominant, that, and I'm shoot left-handed, it's one of those weird things that if I open my right eye, right, it's my dominant eye, and then everything goes to shit, and I can't see anything. And it's, I'd asked a long time ago, like when I was a kid growing up, why that was, and the answer I got that I just kind of went with for the rest of my life was not the correct answer, so I just always shot with my left eye. I probably, looking back on it, I should have learned to shoot my right eye, but I probably should have learned to shoot right-handed at that point. But that's,
freak of nature.
I am left-handed. Like, that's, well, I mean, but that's just the way I shoot, right? I am interested to see it. And that's part of what I was talking about. Like, whenever I get back to consistently shooting and I want to make all these changes to what I'm doing, that's one of the things I'm going to, either I'm going to shoot, you know, 100% right eye dominant, which, you know, aligning my sight with my right eye, or try to figure out if I can make it work with right eye open, right? Even though lining the sight up with my right eye, or with my left eye, I don't know if I physically have to make that transition. And that's going to be what I'm going to have to figure out and, you know, probably talk to people that have done that or that shoot opposite eye dominant. I know, like, Carl Wren shoots opposite eye. I think he shoots with his right hand and he's left eye dominant, or one or the other, but he lines the sight up with his dominant eye, I think, not with the off eye. So I'll have to probably approach someone that does that and find out, okay, what do I need to commit to? I don't know. It'll be interesting. I'm willing to give anything a try at that point.
So you also said that you're changing your carry points too. What were you, 'cause before, were you carrying strong side, or what were you doing?
Yeah. Yeah. I carry my holster now is for strong side, and then I'm going to try to shift to an appendix carry.
Okay, cool. Are you going with one of the triple T's again, or are you buying a different one?
I don't know. I haven't, because I'm not there yet, I don't know.
Okay.
If I'm going to keep carrying my FN, or if I'm going to end up going with a different route, because we've had that conversation before about guns that fit our hands and stuff like that. And, I've told you before, there's certain guns that I've shot that I felt like really fit my hand, and that even with iron sights, I felt like I could almost shoot better than the gun I have right now. Not to knock on the gun I have right now. I love it. You know, I've shot all my classes with it. But maybe there's something out there that fits my hand a little better. And I'll probably still end up starting the transition with my FN. But maybe on down the road, I'll figure out something different, but it's probably going to be the FN. And as far as the actual holster, I haven't even ordered one yet, 'cause I wasn't even to that point. So, well, more to come.
Yeah. So what other ones are you, since we're kind of on the topic of gear wise, what other guns are you looking at outside of the FN? Are you looking something with a little bit bigger, more compact size? Because is the FN a compact, or is it a subcompact that you have?
It's a compact.
Okay.
It's essentially the same size as the Glock 19. It's that same category. So honestly, I've shot several Canik pistols, and they just fit my hand really well. I wanted to try the PDP like you carry again, just to see if that, because part of what I run into is trying to figure out, you know, basically reach my fingers. Like my fingers aren't the longest fingers, so it's trying to find something that I'm not shifting in my hand to try to hit the mag release or something like that. Something that just fits a little better. And I'm not saying that part. I make it work with the FN just fine. It doesn't. I don't have a problem with it, but I do have to like shift my thumb forward to be like shift the gun in my hand to be able to get to it rather than just being able to reach it with my thumb. And I'm not saying that's something off or anything like that, but I feel like I could find one that fits my hand a little better as far as doing that. Cause I've felt guns before that, you know, do. I also, and this is the long shot, right? But I want to shoot a staccato because I just want to shoot one.
Say that.
I know I can rent them here at the local. Yeah, right. I mean, it's, I'm not saying, you know, that's a long shot, right? Like I'm not, that's a, I've set money aside for a while and I've got money burning a hole in my pocket type of thing. I'm not saying that that's a realistic one, right? Cause that's the type of gun that if I carry it all the time and something happens and I have to leave it in the car, I wouldn't feel comfortable leaving a gun that expensive in the car that may get stolen.
You know, leave it in the car.
$5,000 is a lot different.
That is a used car. I'm saying, like, what are you?
Yeah. It's probably worth more than the car I'm leaving it in.
Yeah.
but that's what I'm saying, right? Like it. So that again, that's one of those things I just wanted to try. And the other thing is, I know that even the last time I've looked at new guns, I guess I should say, like any guns that have recently came out, it's actually been a little while. I haven't went to the gun store probably 2 years to even just look at you know, perusing the shelves and just looking at guns. So it's one of those things of I know other guns have come out and I know that they feel different. There's again nothing against my FN. I've shot guns that I know fit my hand a little better. And when I was trying to get to the point of getting better with it, it was one of those things of I was really on the fence before I kind of took this hiatus. I was really on the fence even then of, you know, do I get another gun? Do I keep shooting this one? Just say, you know what, I've got this gun. I've done some stuff to it. You know, I'm committed to it. And I guess I'm in that weird spot of, like the Canics that I shot with iron sights, I could do the same grouping as I could with a red dot on my FN and do it fairly consistently. And God, you know, you can take that for what it is, but whenever I grabbed it, it just seemed like it fit my hand well. Yeah. And there's something to be said about that, at least from my perspective.
Well, at the end of the day too, that's what you're, you know, how well you can hold on to whatever it is you're shooting is how well it's fitted to your hands, right? Regardless mm-hmm. of what make or model it is. You know, I mean, I can tell you before I decided to go to the PDP, I went into the store that day solely going in to look at a 509 and a Shadow Systems. And in my mind, I had it made up that I was probably going to walk out with the Shadow Systems. And I saw the PDPs. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know what? I'm hearing some stuff about them. I'm going to pick them up and try it. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is what I'm looking for. And I was like, I really had a hard time before with this because my grandpa had an old PK380 back in the, you know, I don't know, God, it was 15 years ago, man. And mm-hmm. that Walther PPK380 at that time sucked. Like, it wouldn't cycle anything. And so I kind of had a bit of a bias towards Walther in that sense. Like, I know they had their other smaller guns, like, their, you know, the 007 guns and things like that. And, mm-hmm. But it's like any of their new polymer stuff, like, I just wasn't too sure about. And so after I felt it, like, man, I went down the rabbit hole looking at reviews, research, everything. And I came out understanding, okay, it seems like this is a reliable deal. And certain law enforcement departments are starting to take it on as their duty gun, which it's not all of them, which ultimately, mm-hmm. that's what Walther was aiming for, right? They were aiming for a duty pistol.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I mean, I picked it up and hadn't turned back, and I love that thing. The only thing that I would trade it for right now, which I'd be hesitant to trade it for now, would be one of the steel frame ones that they just came out with. Walther just released a PDP mm-hmm. steel frame in a full size and a compact, and those things look nasty.
Yeah.
But that's...
I'd seen that.
Yeah,
I'd seen those.
I'm just not sure if that extra... I like a polymer gun for the carry and the weight. And so I'm not mm-hmm. sure if on steel frame gun, mm-hmm. if that'd just be a little too much weight for me in the pants line. But I would like to have a full one for like, or full size for USPSA and stuff like that. That'd be sick. But maybe one day I'll get enough, we'll get some sponsorship or something, and they'd send us some free stuff. That'd be cool. But that's not looking bright in the future.
Hey man, 2 weeks. There you go. Pick up sponsorship there.
Yeah.
You run away with the competition.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. Doubtful. Nice. Doubtful. But yeah, I mean the way it fits your hand makes so much of a difference, and you know, just how it feels for you, and we've talked about this before. Shooting is so mm-hmm. it comes down to the individual, right? You can go to a class and somebody can tell you, well, this is their technique that they use and this is what they do to shoot at this level. And if you do shoot this way, like they do, you'll be able to shoot at that level. And that's just not right, right? Because they may be using certain grips and pressures and seeing different visual confirmations that you're not caught up to yet or may not even realize. And so they can preach to you all these things about or show you like this grip, that grip, but you can't really feel what they feel mm-hmm. and see what they see. So the technique isn't a single technique. It's the technique of that individual that's shooting and what's going to work for them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, most people don't advocate for putting your fingers on front of the trigger guard, but you got guys like Lena Mikulic mm-hmm. and there are several other shooters that shoot that way. Now, are there issues that they could be putting tension on the trigger guard and pulling it? Yeah, but if they've mastered it to work that way, then who gives a shit, right? That works for them.
Yeah.
So, yeah it's so much down to the individual.
Yeah, it's just got
to
be what you learn.
But,
that's another thing. I'll say this, like part of what, and I mean, anybody that knows about guns at this point probably knows about staccatos, right? The whole 2011 frame, all that stuff. The reason I want to shoot them is I think the last time, Coleon Noir was on with, I think Joe Rogan, they were talking about it. They had went to the factory and that day and shot out there and done all that stuff. And he said something to the effect of that they're basically a cheat code. He said, this gun's so good, because I guess he and Joe Rogan both carry them. They said, this gun's just so good, it's basically a cheat code. He said, however you shoot with whatever your regular gun is, he said, you put you on one of these, and you're going to shoot probably right out the box 20% better than you were shooting with that other gun. And that's kind of the whole... Again, it's a kind of a pipe dream. Like, I can't justify spending that much money on it. Kind of like buying, like, I've always wanted a SCAR just to own one. But I can't justify buying one when I have an AR that does the same thing. Like, I'm not in a war zone. I don't have a reason to to go out and buy one. So it's like, you know, I look at that and I go, and also what I alluded to, like, the whole idea of, now I'm carrying something that's worth that much. Do I get hesitant about carrying it? Do I start thinking, well, maybe if we're going to go, you know, maybe I'm going to go somewhere and then they might have a, you know, whatever marking on the door that tells me, you know, 51% or whatever it is, 30-06, 30-07 on the door. And I'm like, oh man, I can't carry this in, but I have to go in because of whatever. You know, I don't feel comfortable leaving this in the car. What am I going to do? I don't know, man. I go back and forth on it. Would it be cool to have? Yeah. Do I think I'm ever going to spend the money on it? I don't know. But that's why I keep saying, like, I want to shoot one. I wouldn't, you know, I'm not putting that possibility out of my mind. But that's that. I was just kind of giving you a little bit of why I threw that one in there. None of the other guns I'm thinking about are, I think probably the most expensive is probably close to $1,000 that I've been looking at. But that's kind of, I think that's about where I kind of draw my limit at. A carry gun is like $1,000 generally once I put all my stuff on it. Like my FN, I think, let's see, I think I have probably 1,200 in it now because I think I put a, because I put a trigger in it. So it's one of those things of like, I don't know. I want it to be something I'm not going to feel bad if I scratch up or ding up or
right.
anything like that.
Yeah. So
that's kind of what I look at also from a training perspective. You know, if I'm going to take this out to the range and then scratch it or just, you know, just holstering and unholstering, right? Just holster marks on it. Am I going to feel bad whenever I've got holster marks on my gun? If and I, you shouldn't feel that way, right? If it's your gun, you're going to use it. That's going to happen to it. But I've always had a hard time looking at something and being like, man, this is really nice. And then I look back at it later, like, man, what are all these scratches, you know? And it's, I do that with my car, my truck, and it's, hell, it's 11 years old now. And if I find a scratch on it, I feel bad. I
mean, yeah.
That's just how I'm always going
to
be, I guess.
Yeah. I do. I mean, and I kind of do the same thing to an extent. I've gotten over it with my carry guns. Like,
yeah.
I would say 85%. There's still that leftover percentage that it's like, yeah, I need to clean that up a little bit or whatever, you know, and, you know, let's try to darken some of this up. But, you know, I got the slide wear and everything's there, you know, it's like it is what it is, right? I shoot the shit out of it and that's my goal. So I try not to let it get to me, but I've always been that same way. But I got somebody put a ding in my door of my 4Runner at work, and like, it's not bad, but it's like one of those pebble sized ones that you're not going to be able to fix. And so I see it every time when the light hits it and it's like, ugh. Like, I've done so good so far, and then somebody does this, and it's just, well, shit, whatever. But no, I feel you on that, man. It's the bad thing about that is you say you're like, I don't know if I can commit to it, but you're going to go and shoot one of those things, and you're going to pick up the phone and be like, hey, baby, so we're taking the lien out on the house this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to change my life.
I do feel like you would probably get over any of the holster wear stuff. If it is, like, to say that a product actually gives you a 20% increase in, like, your shootability, like, that's a significant statement. And if, you know, not saying that that doesn't exist, but generally, you know, we always talk about, you know, don't get caught up in buying the hottest, the new greatest thing because somebody says that's going to make you better, because 9 times out of 10, unless you're at a particular level, that's not going to help you anymore. And even if it does give you a benefit, you know, what is the minute percentage benefits that you're actually going to get out of that? But yeah, if you can take something like that and you actually get a 20% gain because it's steel frame, it shoots flat as shit, and like you can just burn it down and like keep everything tight, like, I would want one, but I damn sure couldn't afford a $5,000 handgun. Right. I'd be divorced.
Yeah, right. And that's why I've not made any move towards it, because, you know, it's one of those things I look at and I'm like, man, that'd be cool. But right now I haven't shot one, so it's like, you know, I can tell myself, it's probably not that good. Yeah, no, I've got a 1911 that I really love to shoot, and I suspect if it shoots anything like that, then yeah, I will probably love shooting it and want to have one. That's one of those where it's like, maybe I can find a used one. And then you look for used ones, and anywhere you see that's got one, it costs more than like a new one because someone's got a red dot on it. Someone's got all that stuff on it. And you're like, wow, I'm not going to save any money.
Yeah. maybe Staccato should change their selling point, that out of every Staccato comes with like, so out of that $5,000, $2,000 of it is like a beat up Corolla. So all these dudes that get divorced have a car to live in after they spend all that much money on a handgun. Nice. But But no, yeah,
but yeah, I don't, I can't even remember now. Yeah. Oh, there was a, just real quick side. Have you ever seen the Terran Tactical, the guns that they make?
Like yes, their own they recently line? Just came out with a Kanik too. Terran Tactical did a deal with Kanik.
Yeah, I saw that too. That was kind of what I was gonna bring up too. And it actually wasn't too terribly priced. I think it was like close to $1,000 somewhere around there. Looked up
$1,100.
But have you you've seen their what is it the sand? Yeah, what is it? The Sand Viper or something like
Pit
that?
Pit Viper or something
they make
like that.
Two different ones that are actually theirs.
Yeah, yeah, I, like I know what you're talking about, but I don't recall the names.
Okay, yeah, I was just wondering. They're one of those things like that's a cool looking gun. I don't, you know, they're substantially higher price range even than a Staccato. But I was like, I always wondered, you know, how those really shoot, right? We go back to the, to me, it's the law of diminishing returns. Like at some point I got to believe that much money I'm spending on something, you know, what am I gaining out of that? Cause like I'm over here having a heartache about a Staccato and even knowing from, you know, fairly high profile, people in the gun community that those are very good and, you know, very high quality. I always wonder, at what point would people consider it's too much to be like, but I guess then again, I'm not someone with that kind of free money, so I'll never have to worry about that.
Yeah.
But
so to add, I guess you could say kind of pain to the, or dirt to the wound on that one is that, so Staccato at the Staccato Ranch, they will host like matches out there. And so I came across this on Practice Corps the other day that they had some match going on. I want to say it was maybe in relation to a benefit. I can't remember, but they had it on Practice Court, and I was looking up the dates trying to figure out. I'm like, I'll go to the Staccato Ranch and shoot, you know, but it wasn't going to work. But I'm like, man, look, first of all, I'd like to know how many guys are going to the Staccato Ranch that are not shooting staccatos out there at the Staccato Ranch. You know, it's like, yeah, we're having a match. Let's invite all the pores out so we can...
Yeah, that would be me.
Yeah, it'd be both of us. But yeah, it's they do have some stuff out there. It'd be interesting to go and visit. But
Well, it'd be cool to just, that's one of those places just cool to go see. I think just to go hang out and just see the factory. I think I was trying to remember what they said. I think you can still do a factory tour out there, but that'd be pretty cool.
Aspen, you're on the podcast. Yeah, for those of y'all that are listening, my dog's in here with me, so if y'all hear some licky noises, that's just him. But yeah, so yeah, we kind of touched on training woes, got into some gear topics, gun topics. We usually don't touch too much on gear that much because we don't get a lot of it for free or sent our way for discounts or anything, so... We don't want to endlessly talk about what we have, but there's some, you know, there's something to be said about changing equipment, right? To being open to what's working for you and what isn't, and not being tied down to one particular piece, just like not being tied down to one particular technique is just as important also. So, yeah, I think that we can kind of wrap this one up on that. I think we kind of touched on both sides of it. I mean, that lends itself to to gear as well, you know, the woes of looking for the right gear.
Yeah, but it's sometimes it can be expensive, that's for sure,
unfortunately. But I will say, if you find something that you do like, or if you know, if you're someone like, man, the best you can do, best I can do is afford a Glock or something like that, man, go buy a Glock. Get some training, buy a bunch of ammo and magazines, go to some classes, and just, you can learn to shoot that thing well. There are guys that shoot Glocks just fine, for regardless of what people think about them or whatnot, but it's just making sure that something, that it's fitted to your hand. Anything with exchangeable back plates ought to be able to work out pretty well, and even then you can buy aftermarket back plates, I think, for a lot of that stuff too. Not back plates, but back straps. So, anyways, yeah, y'all do what y'all want with that. Figure it out. Make sure you find something that works. Make sure you get some good training, and make sure you're putting in some time if you're going to make this a lifestyle of yours. So that'll be something coming up in the future that we'll talk about the differences in people, you know, that go and pick up a gun, can still carry. They can still carry all the time, but they don't really get into the, you know, the training habits, things like that, and they're just kind of carrying it around all the time and not really doing anything. Anyways, getting in the fox, the rabbit hole of that one, that's something to look out for the next go around. Hopefully we can have a good guest on for that discussion. Got some stuff in the works. If you haven't yet, subscribe to this podcast, give us a like, leave us a review and a rating if you would be so kind to do so. And on Spotify, we have polls at the end of our episodes, so that's a good way for you to get with us and let us know what other conversations you would like to hear us talk about, or particular guests you might want us to try to have on here as well. So then that's go fill those out. And you can also follow us on Instagram at Citizen Defense. That is at @citizen_defense. We will have all our podcast episodes up there, all our training content that we're doing right now. You'll find all that stuff there. And then you can also find everything from training classes, social media, this podcast on our website at www.citizendefense.net. And don't forget to go check us out on YouTube. You can find this podcast on YouTube and other training content as well. So until next time, guys, I hope y'all enjoyed this lighthearted conversation. Hope everybody has a great week. And until next time, y'all stay safe.